This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Okay, it's a pleasure for me to introduce our keynote address this year, which is one of the highlights of our meeting every year. And we're really excited and privileged this year to have Dr. Julie Freischlag join us as our Binkley professor. She spent the day with us yesterday at UCSF and to be with us here at our symposium this morning. Dr. Freischlag probably needs no introduction to most of you in the audience, but to not do so would be a disservice to highlight all the things she's contributed to surgery and vascular surgery. Really requires us to just acknowledge these accomplishments. Julie is back in California. She started in California in her surgical training and her vascular fellowship at UCLA, and then initially in her early faculty appointments at the University of California in San Diego and UCLA before going to Wisconsin, coming back to UCLA to lead the vascular surgery group there. And then a decade ago, took a huge leap to become the first woman chief of surgery at Johns Hopkins, where she thrived for the last decade and led that department through lots of productive changes. And now, because she got bored with that, and as I said last night at dinner, President of the United States was not open this year, has come back to California. And we're thrilled to have her back in California, where she just 7 weeks ago took on the position of Dean of the Medical School and Vice Chancellor at UC Davis Health System. On top of doing all that this year, Julie is president of the SVS, which I happen to know is not a minor commitment job. And she's also chair of the Board of Regents of the American College of Surgeons and editor of JAMA Surgery. So you can see that Julie has a very broad impact on the practice of surgery and vascular surgery, not only regionally, but across the globe. She's won many honors and awards and is really recognized in vascular surgery, particularly for her contributions in abdominal aortic aneurysm, being the PI of the OVER trial and other trials, her contributions in thoracic outlet disease, which we'll hear a little bit more about later today, and really writing about the broad spectrum of vascular disease. So we're thrilled, Julie, that you could take time out of your really super busy life, even busier than normal, I think, right now, to join us today, and we're looking forward to your lecture.
Well, thanks so much. So we're sort of going to shift into a different arena for right before lunch. It's better to do these kind of talks before lunch than after, because usually after lunch you take a little snooze. So hopefully I'll be able to be a little entertaining, and I really appreciate being asked. I was really impressed with the division at UCSF. I was a sub-I as a fourth-year medical student at UCSF, and they continue to lead the way in many things, and one is leadership, and that's what I was asked to talk about today. Because one thing we've really tried to accomplish in the SVS this year with a retreat and looking at vascular is we really have been focused inside a lot so that we're up to date and can do the procedures and take care of our patients. And as Peter said, be involved with trials and looking at what's best. And now we actually have data to know what's best. We really have to now look externally to ourselves and really be involved in the bigger picture. And there's nothing more poignant that showed that this year than the activity in Washington, which didn't turn out quite why we wanted, but our participation to repeal the SGR and partner with all the other surgical groups, as well as the AMA, which I hate to say that, but we did because they actually have come around a bit, has been really effective. And we're known as a very powerful but small group in Washington. And wherever you are, whether it's your hospital, your research lab, your academic healthcare center, you really need to lead. Surgeons are very capable of making decisions with no information, and that's become very valuable now in healthcare. And we also aren't scared to make a decision and say, oops, it's wrong, I'm going to change direction. And I can't tell you how many leaders can't do that. And so we really need to lead. So just this year, about six surgeons became deans. And I think we all need to run everything. That's one woman's opinion. And in my first meeting with all the deans from UC, I found two reasons I was there. One was to remind us we are taking care of patients. We sort of forgot that for about a half a day as we discussed finances. And also that we need to take care of doctors, that we need to really enhance the experience of young doctors coming through that. So with that, I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I look at leadership, how that I have thought about it, and then certainly to stimulate you to lead wherever you are, even if it's just you, you know, do a good job leading you as you go forward. So leadership is an improvisational art. It really means to go forth and die. So I would tell you, don't do the die, but just go forth and to make that happen. And it can be pretty lonely sometimes. There's a couple books I'm going to tell you to read. Most leadership people do. These are good surgical books, though. They're quick, they're easy, and they make sense. And so this is one that I've used for since I went to Hopkins, Staying Alive Through the Dangers of Leading. And Ronald Heifetz and Marty Linsky are great about giving you instances, and I'll use a few of their thoughts in my talk. And it's the other one is a poetry book, which sounds a little odd, but when you are a leader, you need to be pretty spiritual. You need to make your people be spiritual, and this one is great, Leading from Within, Poetry That Sustains the Courage to Lead. And I will use a few of these poems, and it's from Intrator and Scribner. And the last one, if you haven't read either of those, you should. Drive is a surgical book. It is so perfect for your faculty and your chief residents. It basically says, why do you come to work every day? And if you don't know, you may want to think about it. And also, you may change. I have changed my life a lot about why I come to work every day. And the other one is by Stuart Friedman, who's from the Wharton School of Business, called Total Leadership. And it's really how to be a leader and have a richer life, because some people think leaders actually have a miserable life. I will say I don't. You even met my husband last night. He even said I have a pretty good life. Now that I'm back in California and it's not snowing. And in this book, it actually has a little worksheet for you to look at how you're spending your time and whether how you would like to spend your time and how you would like to spend your time and how to change that if you're doing things you don't want to do. Because the key to life is to do most of what you want to do half the time. Bruce DeBeale taught me that. So these are two great books. So leadership is so good for surgeons because you have to have all that discipline. We're so disciplined, right? We have to have the right clamp, right balloon, right this, right that. But you also have to be flexible. Our grafts clot, they bleed, they rupture. We have to recharge. You heard Peter say, well, you get that phone call and go, oh, God, and, you know, what happened? But I think that's what makes us good leaders, discipline, and then being flexible. Now, the challenge is try to adapt this, because no one knows what's going to happen in healthcare. And you have to really work with your passions and your differences. You saw that. You know, 20 years ago, we would have yelled at each other about that case we just discussed, about who's right and who's not right. But you heard Peter say, we have a difference in opinion. You have experience, I have this. That's how you need to lead. And because of that, you can make big differences with your energy by making sure you focus on the problem and not the person. Now, we tend to do this, and actually I'm a great example of this. We want to have challenges. We want to exercise our capacities. We want to explore and learn. So everyone that works with you, you have to give them a chance. That means your physician assistants, your nurse practitioners, your assistants, whoever's with you, they really want to go do something amazing. So you need to give everyone a chance. And you'll hear me talk about that in my presidential address this year at the SVS. Now, there really are two kinds of people. This is why surgery is so great. You know, this is it. There's two kinds of people. There's not 100. There's those that are really focused on what's inside, and that's what they go do. And eventually you get there. As you age, you all become intrinsically, because you spend the first half of your life collecting things and making as much money as you can, and you pack the second half giving it all away, okay? So a lot of you young people are doing this, and it feels so intense, but pretty soon you give it all away, and I'm on that side. So you really need to be intrinsically, but there are people that work for you that really are fueled more by extrinsic ones, and those are difficult people because they always want something, and they want a lot of something. And when you give it to them, they come back for more something. And so that's why you need to really move your group from X to I. So I's always outperform X's later on. So as you're looking at a faculty member who wants more and more and more so they don't leave you, your I's who aren't complaining and just working along, they're going to outperform your X's all the time. So you really need to try to hire I's, you know, so that you look for I's. And not that money and recognition aren't important. I like money. I like recognition. But if you are an I, you're better off. You look better. You look younger than your stated age. You seem to be in a good mood all the time. And the behaviors that you will do, this all comes from drive, is autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Now, doesn't that sound like a surgeon? Now, how to do this is two ways. We talked about, Mike and I actually talked about carrots and sticks yesterday, is that if you give too many carrots, you really extinguish your intrinsic motivation. The performance actually goes down because they go, unless you do this, I'm not going to do that. And of course, I'm not going to do that because you didn't do this. People lose their creativity because they're constantly trying to outthink you. It crowds out good behavior. It can affect your whole team. It makes people cheat, do shortcuts, do things that they wouldn't do. Maybe do bypasses that maybe aren't needed. Or maybe that carotid isn't quite an 80% stenosis. It can be very addictive if you know you can beat me up and win. And it really makes people think in the short term and not the long. So what you want to do is to figure out how you have a good time every day and how a creative person feels that way, whether you spend your day operating. I saw this all day yesterday. Some were doing research, some were operating, some were doing research projects, different hospitals. And that's how creative, when you're doing something amazing, doing a great bypass, finishing an abstract, finishing a grant, having an experiment finally work, that feeling is what you would like every day that you're at work. So how do you get this? So autonomy is really to figure out how you can get results-only work environment. You know, we used to be pretty rigid, you know, what we wore, where we were at. Now with electronics, you can get a lot more done at home and on the road or on my, you'll see me frequently on my phone. I run departments and divisions and now schools over a phone. So you can work most anywhere how you want. And then mastery is all about a mindset. It's a pain and it's an asymptote. You know, you never ever get perfect. You know, we always thought once we were 20 years into vascular, nothing else would clot, bleed, or fail, right? Not so much. You know, even famous big surgeons have big problems if you take on big cases. So as you try to master this, you have to realize you'll never always reach that. So this is in the book, and it's one of my favorite quotes, and I would use all of you to use this, especially with your students. As you can see, you need not only see what someone is doing to know if it's a vocation, whether it's a woodworker or a painter. My younger brother's a watercolor painter. You only have to watch their eyes. You know, we watch people operate. We have those pictures in our offices of the famous surgeons we have with our eyes focused. It's a cook mixing a sauce. A surgeon making a primary incision. I guess sometimes we do that now, right? Frequently, we just poke the patient. But a clerk completing a bill of lading, wearing the same rapt expression. It's that I am the object look. And you should have that in each one of the people you work with. Now, what is your purpose? You know, we always need to define goals. And as you look at strategic planning for the SVS, which we did, what are our goals? And I'll be talking about that so we know where we're going. And now every time we have a conference call, if someone wants money or something, is it part of our strategic plan? Is it part of our goals? Because we can get sidetracked. What are our words? What are our policies? Who are we? And this quote from Julius Irving is perfect because we all have had those days, is that being a professional is doing the things you love to do on the days you don't feel like doing them. Whether it's because you're fatigued or you're overworked or you just can't take one more piece of information, not one more complaint, not one, but you still will give that person your time, that patient, a good operation, that family, a nice discussion of what you just did, a student about why you wanted to be a vascular surgeon. And I think those are the best leaders we know because you never know they're having a bad day. Never. So how do you change an organization? And I am going to write a book about this. It's just so many people have to die and retire first. my husband and I are actually going to write this book because he saw me do this. He's a businessman, and I felt what I was doing, and we didn't always agree. But Hopkins was a fabulous place, and now it's a fabulous contemporary place. And what I think I did was really to make it realize that there is an outside world, that Halsted is dead, and that perhaps there's different ways and brilliant people that come from all around the country that could help us out, because we tended to be pretty insular. Again, similar to what I'm telling you to do with Vascular, is that we really need to talk to cardiologists and interventional radiologists and all sorts of people, or interventional dermatologists, or whoever wants to do these procedures, because you really need to know what's out there so that you're better too. And occasionally, they have a better idea, you know, so you need to hear it. So how do you do it? So I'm starting at Davis now. I've been there a couple months trying to figure out what's good and what's bad, and there's lots of good there. And I have a couple things I need to do already. But you need to sort of raise the heat up. So you need to say, they're all looking at me about what's important. And I love starting jobs in March so that by June you have something to say we're going to do for the next year. So you see me on my CV, I always move between January and March. And so I've already got two or three things we're going to do better. One is getting more involved with the undergrad students, because we have a very underserved population. So they go to medical school and become doctors. And we really need to have that happen. And we're going to set up a whole program along with Sacramento High School, where Kevin Johnson's our mayor, and he went there. And we have a really good opportunity, and I'll do that, because I love having high school students and college students in the OR and with me. So you raise the heat. You tell them what's important. But don't get sidetracked and tell them 30 things. Two or three. That's why it's so surgical leading. And then you have to lower the temperature when it gets a little hot, you know, because you've heard many things that happened at Hopkins, and probably all of them are true, and some of them I'll deny, there's no question. But part of it is that you need to really lower and higher the heat according to the situation. You have to address those tough questions. So for being a leader, you have to really confront it. And that's why surgeons are so good leaders. And then you have to take more responsibility than we're comfortable with. We've been doing that all our lives, right? We loved being in the OR without anybody there, you know, until something happened as a chief resident or fellow. And we always want to stretch it. And we need to bring conflicts to the surface so that it's not under here or back there. And I think our society has improved that greatly over the last 5 to 10 years, where if we're not happy with what's going on, we bring it to a board meeting or talk to each other, not about each other. And then there are these gadflies and oddballs, and we probably all qualify for that. We're all a little odd. There is a theory that when they shipped everyone over from Europe in the 1700s, they didn't ship the normal kids that were behaving. You know, they shipped all the weird kids, you know, the ones that they thought would survive. And then we all married each other. And so here we are. Okay, all these oddballs that came over, and now the ones that come from foreign lands, too. They're the most innovative, exciting, eccentric kids, you know, from South America and Far East. They're not the normal, complacent kids. They're still back home. So we all come here, so we're all a little odd. And you need to have those people, so there's always a different idea. And as a leader, sometimes you get tired, but when that person comes in and says, do you have a minute? And you never have a minute, and you know it's going to be an hour. But they may actually have an amazing thing to tell you that's a little offbeat. And some of those have been the best things I accomplished. So lowering the temperature actually lets you relax so that you can put structure to a problem. Many of you have seen that. You know, how are we going to do the call schedule? How are we going to share patients that are unassigned? How are we going to do this? And always claim responsibility. You know, every bad thing that happens is your problem. You know, it's just your problem. And all the good stuff you probably can't take credit for. So that's just what leaders do. And then you really need to let people have some ability to get away from the problem and come back. So another basketball person, Phil Jackson, I guess he keeps reinventing himself doing the same thing at other places. You know, you can do that too. But this was a great quote from him is, you know, how do you forge a winning team when you come into a new place? Is again connecting with something bigger than themselves. If you can get them not to use the word I and turn them into an intrinsic motivated person, all of a sudden you have a team that will talk about the team and not themselves. So how do you do that? You know, so this actually comes from Heifetz's book. You need to get on the balcony and really look. You need to pay attention. Right now I'm spending every day meeting all the chairs, the deans, people, students, and just listening. And then you need to figure out what is so important about the culture where you're at that they don't want it changed. It's intrinsic. It's what they are. And then you need to listen to the song beneath the words. And, you know, most people will meet with you for an hour, and the first 50 minutes are fine. The last 10 minutes, they actually tell you what you want they want to tell you. So you really need to listen really hard at the last few minutes. And then you really need to look at the behavior. You know, what are they telling you? Why is it important? And it is true that some of the worst people you have show up real quick in your office. So the first that have to see you the first week, they probably are people in trouble. And you need to think they don't really love you. They just want you to take care of them because you probably need to get rid of them. And so they'll be in there first. And I was telling a story yesterday. Actually, one of the vascular surgeons I get to work with now is Misty Humphreys. And we're going to do the thoracic outlet program together. And I called her in to talk to her about instruments and stuff, and she said, "You told me when you're first in the office that you have to go." She goes, Am I going? And I said, "No, Misty, I wanted you. You didn't call me to do that." So she was cute. And we're going to start up the TOS practice out there. And then you need to listen to yourself. You need to be who you are. And sometimes they're really heartbreaking, you know, where you made a mistake or you didn't listen well. And you need to listen. And we're also good at talking. And so trying to make sure you listen and don't have to fix it right away. I think that actually is attributed to many of us. You know, we're so surgical-like. You know, it's clotted, I'll bypass it. You know, it's gangrenous, I'll amputate it. You know, I'll do it. And so when they come in and they tell you, and you have that little thing, I've developed this thing that's sort of like the cartoon characters where you tell me something, I'm like, "You've got to be kidding. There's no way we can do it. You're out of your mind." But I don't say that. Instead, I say, "How interesting." You know, and so you do it. But you can put that all up here so that you keep listening, but you can actually react there and not say it back. And that has worked really well for me. Now you're going to worry when I say, "How interesting," right? So here's some poems to do it. This is one about listening, and you can read this. This is by John Fox. I used this in my first talk. I had to give a talk on the state of the healthcare system at UC Davis, and I've been there 8 days. So it was a short talk. But I used this quote, and everyone loved it because they knew I was going to listen. And you need to tell stories. Now, you've heard me tell 3 or 4 stories today, and you won't remember anything about what I said today. You may have written down the books. You'll probably email me because you didn't get it quite all down. And you won't remember any of the philosophy, but you'll remember the story about Misty, you know, wondering whether I was calling her in to tell her she had to go. Or yesterday, I told a story about my mom having an aneurysm, and many of you have heard that story. Stories are so powerful, especially if you can tell stories where you made a mistake or perhaps that you had to reclaim yourself. Because most people think you get to these leadership positions because it was a slide. You know, you got up there and there you are. It's not a slide. It's a ladder and you fall off and you have issues and you have sores and bumps. And so you need to tell people that if your life isn't going quite the way you want, it doesn't mean you're not going to lead. I mean, I had no idea I'd be at Hopkins for 11 years, and that wasn't on my list of things to do when I was down at UCSD as a young faculty member, where I first met Peter, because he was a fellow down there. But it really tells you who I am, doesn't it, about how I look at things. So tell stories. That's how we fundraise. That's how you get Congress to listen to us, is to tell a patient story. That's how you get people to come work for you, is telling stories. That's how you teach your kids, is telling stories. So learn what kind of stories you're willing to tell, and then use them, because they're so powerful. This is another poem, When You Get Lost. And I wish I could tell you I was never scared. You know, if you think back to the first ruptured aneurysm you did and how scared you were, or if you think back to the first operation you did by yourself and you were scared to death, or when you watched your fellow do the first time they did an operation and you were trying not to help, there is that fear even with leading and trying to make things change. So you really need to know that I'm scared frequently, too. You know, is this job going to work out? I could have stayed at Hopkins. They sort of liked me there. I finally got it the way I wanted. What was I thinking? And so part of it is the scary piece to me makes me learn a bit more and also makes me have higher impact, I think, to others coming behind us. Right now, I'm real into getting people into medicine who are quite valuable, which includes, you know, underserved populations, women, those that perhaps didn't think they could get into medicine and to surgery. And I think telling your story and telling it was a little scary to get through is really important so that they don't give up. You also need to be creative yourself. I still publish. I'm still going to operate. I'm still running the overtrial. I'm trying to be innovative in our approaches, and you need to really make sure people stay that way. One of my biggest fears about the Accountable Care Act and everything is we're going to lose all our creativity and innovation. So you need to do what Peter said, you know, stay in trials, think, dream, because, you know, we need to keep doing that so that we end up being better in 10 years, not just the same. And so whatever it can take for you to keep your people thinking and dreaming, whether it's a half day a week or sending them off to a conference or going to a leadership conference, sitting here today, we all have to dream. Another poem is by William Blake. This is really talking about what you can see. And you need to continue as a leader, too, to see great, amazing things in everyone. Everyone has a spot. The one thing I learned at Hopkins, everyone has a spot. Frequently, they were not in the right spot. But you can find them the spot, and you can put them in the right spot. And sometimes that spot was not in Baltimore. But the spot, everyone's got a spot, and you just need to find it for them. And you do need to have conversations that matter. My people are missing me at Baltimore because I talked to them, and I made them better, and I listened to them, and I told them when they weren't in the right spot. And then they really felt that every day I came, I was there for them, and that's what leaders do. Another poem looking about miracles, really looking at the future, staying connected to your patients, your trainees, your partners, all of those are important. So you really need to be the most energetic person you can be. And if you walk around your institution or your OR and you look miserable and you are not in a good mood, they're going to assume whatever you're leading is falling apart. So it could be just your practice or your division, but what if you're the chair or, heaven forbid, a vice chancellor, which I am trying to figure out exactly what that means. And when I do, I'll tell you what a vice chancellor does. Today we're involved with a strike of TAs on the undergrad campus. I think that's what I do today. But you can't look bad because they're going to assume everything's bad. And you can't look so busy and bad that they go, oh, my goodness. So you get inspired because you see your boss looking real excited or when they tell you a story about what they do. Yesterday I heard about their work on inflammation, and I'm like, my God, I should look at that in my venous patients, which we'll talk about today. And I was so excited looking at a test that maybe that's why it takes a while for that vein to dilate. It's all this resolution of inflammation I heard about yesterday. So you need to keep in, you know, to do it. And really look excited. And I was. Chris is going, you really listened to me? Yes, yes, I did. It was really exciting stuff. So you really need to look that way because it'll make everyone else act exactly like you act. This is one of my favorites. I don't know what that little thing means there. I guess that's, who knows. Thank you. The entire word is a very narrow bridge. So as you go forward wanting to lead, if you decide to go be a division chief or chair or run your hospital or be a CEO or run hospital systems or be a dean. The key is to have no fear at all. You know, just go forward, you know. And my son used to tease me when I would say I'm going to retreat when he was little. He was real into military. He goes, Mom, why would you retreat? You need to go forward. You know, you always go forward, Mom. Yeah. And so I think part of it is surgeons don't have any fear, right? Now, a few of us need a little fear. You know, you have a few of those fellows like, get some fear, you know. But we tend to have no fear. You know, we're going to take on that patient that has 42 bypasses and no vein and has all sorts of, because we have no fear at all. So take that into boardrooms and go to boardrooms. Take that into county medical societies. Take that wherever you can and have no fear at all, saying we can do this, you know. And my big statement now at Davis is, why not Davis? You know, why can't we do this? You know, if you look at the number of kidney transplants volume, this last year, UCSF was first, we were second. Go figure, you know. So why not Davis? So I do think that you need to take whoever you have and have no fear at all. And the most important thing is you have to model the behavior you ask of others. If you're screaming and yelling in that OR, and if you're demanding all the right stuff because you're the chief and you can have anything you want, and if you always get a first start and you bump people and you do all that stuff because you're the chief or you're the chair or you're whoever you are. And then you're surprised when one of your faculty does exactly the same thing. You know, go figure. You know, they're going to do just what you do. So I was always in queue. I booked my cases right. I stayed on time. If I had an emergency case, I called the surgeon, see if I could get in place. You need to make sure that you act just like everybody else you want them to act. Now, if you want everybody to act like that, go for it, you know. But if you really want that to happen, you have to look just the same. So you must do operations. You must speak. You must do research. You must show them what you want to see. You must listen. You need to tell them when you're wrong. And there's nothing that speaks so loud I cannot hear what you say. So what you do is the most incredible thing. And on the national stage for vascular surgery, this is not something to be ignored. We need to be respected not only for our work, which is superb and smart and thoughtful, but also for collaboration and for interaction with others that want to do vascular interventions. And I think our goal, which actually Dr. Conti brought to our attention at the retreat, to get more involved with the American Heart Association, to write international guidelines that we all can agree on within some percentage of difference, to make sure we're part of these large groups, even though we know we can do everything. We can do the open, the endo, we watch patients, we're smart, we know they'll always come back. We have to do that because we don't want to miss something, and we want to lead those groups. And by our behavior being there and being part of these groups, we really will be much powerful for the Society of Vascular Surgery and be able to help with all the things we want to do, you know, access to care for our patients, access to operations, better reimbursement. I got an email today from a surgeon in Portland, Oregon, concerned about lack of reimbursement for imaging following venous ablation and that they want the money back. I sent that to you, Sean, wherever you are. But we're there. We'll make that happen. But I think we really have to be externally looking and being the leader in our communities, our hospitals, wherever you are. If you lead and collaborate, your power will be extensive, and you'll get in rooms and places that you will never dream you could be, and you'll help your patient and your fellow physicians. So my biggest point is to be who you want to be, and everyone will follow. So in summary, you want to create a holding environment, control the temper, pace the work, show them the future. This is the fun work of leadership and why I love it so much. You know, I learned a lot yesterday at UCSF, and I learned a lot at the dean's meeting. You know, I think you can take all those things and go forward and then look good, you know, as you do it. Just look good because everybody will follow you just like the Pied Piper. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.